Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years and number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you doing over there?
It's, it's a Wednesday. It's underway here in the beautiful state of California. And, it's 110 today here. So,
oh, my
little
goodness.
Just a little hot.
Is everybody staying, or is it okay to...
the pool thing, works out good for us. All that money and, effort to keep the pool up and clean, and now we get to use it for the 3 hot months here of the year. But we just taught our lab puppy, Jessie, how to swim. Of course, she knows how to swim. But she was afraid of the pool. And, labs, of course, are water dogs. They love the water. But Jessie, being a puppy, afraid to jump in. Every time we get in there, it's like, nyeh. So I picked her up, we carried her in, set her down, and then, let her realize she could swim back to dry land, and all of a sudden, when she figured that out, she's like a fish now, So, yeah,
oh, that's
got
to be fun. I had a lab before, too, and he was afraid of the water, too, until we finally got him in, and after he really got used to it, he loved it. It's just...
They're fun. They're good therapy. Dogs, as you know, great therapy, and cats are just good for a laugh. We have a new little kitty named Jack, and Jack's just, Mr. Hyperactivity. I love the cycles that cats go through. Super hyperactivity, jumping around, attacking everything, and then you see him winding down and his eyes starting to close, and then boom, he's out. And he'll sleep
for
3 hours.
I saw a cute little Jack. You had him introducing with you a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Well,
that was really cute.
So that's very cool.
And he gets along with the puppy fine, huh?
Well, it's kind of a weird dynamic. Jack is not afraid of the puppy because he'll instigate, he'll instigate stuff. He'll sneak up and grab and bite the tail and all that. And Jessie is, being a lab, even though she's a puppy now and probably 4 months old, she's still, her paws are huge. And she's powerful, and she just doesn't know it. And, she can goof around. And she could kind of just goof around with Jack and kill him because, I looked out the window last night and Jessie had Jack in his mouth like a mother cat carries the baby cat, and running across the lawn with him. Swinging like a rag doll.
I
was so funny
because,
I wish I had it on video. Actually, I will text you. I did get some of Jack on video. But anyway, enough of my pet stories. But that's what's going on in our world, kind of staying out of the heat and playing with the pets and working, doing radio and loving it and producing your show and other shows. And today,
wonderful.
Of course, is what? Independence Day Eve, I guess we could call it, 4th of July Eve, the day before Independence Day. And I'm excited about our topic today, freedom. And what that means, coming up here in about, 20 minutes or so, we're going to have a Major Doug Frazier, U.S. Air Force retired, going to join us, and very passionate, of course, about freedom. He's been he retired in 1990, so he's been retired now. Is that a typo? He doesn't sound that old when I talk to him. But anyway,
you're so
anyway,
funny.
He's retired. And he's going to be with us, and again, talking about freedom.
I think Bernie DeMar is going to be calling in, too, and he actually was in the Marines years ago, and he actually was part of the first Apollo, the spaceship, working on that as an engineer. And he's got, it's amazing,
wow.
Amazing. You know, I love when we can hear all the history and the people that have really dug in and really been disciplined and fighting for freedom in our country, you know. It's just, we want to go, we want to thank everybody out there in the military, because you guys, you men and women serving, are just amazing. Amazing what you go through, amazing what your families go through, and it's not an easy position to be in. And it's we just want to thank you so much wholeheartedly for your courage and bravery and sticking in there and putting up with a lot of things that some people don't put up, can't put up with. And it just really is, we're proud to honor you. And so today, anybody wants to call in and let us know. We want to. The show is about what does freedom mean to you. And Independence Day. And, of course, we have July 4th as our Independence Day here in the United States. Other countries have different days. So we're focusing today basically on freedom in the United States and what that means to you. And I can't think of any better people that have been in the military to be able to go through and tell us what freedom means to them.
Yeah, and the number, again, to call in live is 347-945-5428. That's 347-945-5428. And I, as you were talking, I thought about the aha moment my oldest son had regarding what it is to sacrifice and what people who've sacrificed for us in the military. And he's not, you know, now he's 30. Then he was probably 16, 17. And he and a bunch of buddies had befriended this old kind of, this old kind of crazy guy that would walk around downtown with this big old crazy hat on with all the American flags and some of his army stuff. And everybody, his name was Bob, and everybody kind of made fun of Bob. And he was just this guy that would hang out around downtown. I don't know if he was homeless or what. But so the guys, Ryan and his friends, they befriended this Bob, and they started on Friday nights. They started taking him out to dinner. They, you know, they'd see him standing out on the street waving his little American flag because he's a veteran. And but he was kind of, you know, kind of lost some of his mind, you know. And so it was kind of sad, you know, people honking at him. And so these guys befriended him, and they would take him whenever they saw him out there on the corner. They'd take him into the local diner and buy him dinner. And the guy would spin yarns of the military, you know, and these guys, it became became the highlight of their week. These teenagers who used to make fun of this guy, drive by and, you know, laugh at him, they actually became super good friends with this guy. And they invited, and Ryan goes, "Dad, can we invite Bob over for Thanksgiving? I don't think he has any family." And I said, "Absolutely." And of course, he came over. And of course, you know, he smelled. I don't know. Again, I think he was quasi homeless, and
he lived down on the street, or
But again, so Ryan and his friends again took it upon themselves to find him a place to live, and just kind of made him their project. They're like, "This guy sacrificed for us, you know, and this is not right that nobody's doing anything for this guy." And so then you add to that, Ryan started taking Bob in to Oakland to the Veterans Hospital. They're raising money to take him to the doctor. And so they've taken him in because he could go for cheap or free, you know, and get medication and stuff in Oakland because he's a veteran. Anyway, they take him in there. They start treating him. He starts getting medication. He starts becoming more normal. And Ryan said the first time Ryan came back from the Veterans Hospital in Oakland, and this is my son who was 17, who was, you know, it's all about being cool. And Ryan is just bawling like a little baby. And he's like, "Dad, I was in those hallways and I saw those guys with no legs and no arms in this Veterans Hospital. And dawned on me what it means when we say they sacrificed. They sacrificed their arms and legs and, of course, their lives." And he just started bawling, and I hugged him, and we're both crying. It was just one of those moments, like, where he just got it that, you know, those guys are heroes, and those guys and gals are heroes. And that was so cool because, and I thought I'd share that today because that.
I love that story.
That's the aha thing I think we all need to come to grips with is, and I posted a picture on our show page today. If people are, you might be listening right now live, you're probably looking at the pictures that flash on our show page. And that's at blogtalkradio.com/RealtyUniversal. And you, the picture is of a younger Marine without a, you know, with like a hook where his hand used to be, and he's hugging this old World War II vet, and they're both crying, you know. And again, you just look at that picture and go, that says it all, man. That just says,
wow.
You know, two generations of warriors who've given their lives and given their limbs. Anyway, so it
and
is,
your son
is,
to see that at such a young age and experience that, that's going to really have a lasting effect. And
yeah.
And, amazing.
Yeah, absolutely, and it did. And then Bob, we're not sure what happened to Bob. You know, we kind of blessed him and ministered to him, if you will, for a year or so, and then he just kind of disappeared. And you know, nobody really knows. And that's kind of sad because, again, without any family or friends other than the kids. Because what happened is, of course, Ryan and his buddies all moved on and got married or went to college, and you know, they kind of got out of touch with Bob, and you know, they've not seen him. You know, I've not, since I've been back in Chico, I've not seen him around town. So, not sure, but you know, there's a Bob in every town, or 5 or 10, and I would recommend, especially this week, while we're, you know, it's top of mind, but it'd be a great idea to do it ongoing, obviously, but, you know, bless a veteran somehow. You know, and whether it's going to an, you know, a senior citizen's home, or you could go to a VFW hall in your local town,
mm-hmm.
and find out maybe when there's an activity. Their doors are always open, and sadly, often those VFW halls have, you know, have bars attached to them, and a lot of those guys are kind of just gals are just are in there kind of, you know, drinking and whatnot, but. But it would be cool to do something.
Go in and say thank you and yeah.
Thank you. Yeah,
yeah.
Can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you something? And you know, it doesn't have to be like we always say, it doesn't have to be this major deal. We've talked about giving back, and I remember one show we were listing all the ways you can give back in your community. And man, when you start thinking about it and your brain starts kind of getting on that task, there is just an unlimited opportunity to give back in your community. Same thing goes for, I think, veterans. And maybe, who knows, you know, even organizing, even as I'm thinking about this, organizing a gratitude gathering or party in honor of them, you know, and do that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can do it. We had a friend in Merced when we were down there doing radio morning show who lost two sons in Iraq. Two sons.
Oh, my God, that's horrible.
In Iraq. And so, you know, she, and I mean, they were just 19, 20, you know, just out of high school. And amazing young men, and went to Iraq and were both killed. And rather than kind of feel sorry for herself and kind of just, you know, do that whole withdraw thing, she decided, you know, she joined this group called Blue Star Moms, you know, moms who've lost kids in war. And they organized what they call the Run for the Fallen. And it's a fundraising run for the fallen heroes in any given community, just a way to raise money for local VFWs. And so it's a very proactive, very, you know, what was meant for evil, you know, God kind of turned to good kind of thing. It's a great story because, yeah, they realize that they can take the money they raise in this Run for the Fallen and bless veterans. And, yeah, in this park, Ember said these guys would show up and, you know, and it would be this huge contingent of Army, Navy, Air Force,
God.
Again, multi-generations, and it was just cool to mingle.
It's so important.
And,
oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that the government's finally starting to step in and do more and more for the veterans and like the post-traumatic stress and things, you know, because it's just and they've got you know, the machine equipment that's being built to, for limbs and just to try to really get in and rehabilitate, because they're I mean, it's just such a tough situation to be in, to go in to serve the country and then lose the limbs, and many people get killed and families are dealing with it. And gosh, the military families deal with a lot. They really do. A lot of the women are having to take care of the families while the husbands are away, or vice versa, because women are getting into the fields now. You know, it's just, and we go back. I mean, we started in 1776. We're going to, and we've got a couple little interesting facts. I wonder if people, some people think they're facts, some think they're myths. We're going to take about a 60-second break and come right back and go over some of these facts and see if any of you guys that know out there are used to it, are familiar with it, or if you thought these were facts or myths.
All right, we'll be back right after this.
Real estate is still a solid investment to invest in if you are in for the long haul. It can also be one of the best investments of your capital if handled correctly. In the United States, we are fortunate to have the tax write-offs that we take for granted while owning property. To obtain the best value for your real estate, there needs to be a market of both buyers and sellers, as well as a means of bringing the two together. Now more than ever, due to the recent loan crisis, even with bringing buyers and sellers together, there needs to be a way to make the financing work if a loan is needed. There are still many options available, and we can help. Whether you're a buyer, seller, going through a short sale, investing at the top or bottom, we have trained Realty Universal members in each state and affiliates who can customize your process the way it will work best for you.
Hi,
we
Bernie.
Do advise that you coordinate
we'll
with
right
your
back.
Accountant and real
We're
estate attorney
you
so your plan
all
is
right.
intact. We
Sounds
have
good.
All
Thanks
learned
for
in this economy that planning and averting pitfalls can make a world of difference in our futures. Ultimately, you have to rely on you after consulting with the experts. We set you up to win.
Alrighty, and we are back. Realty Universal Radio, the name of the show, and the phone number to call in is 347-945-5428. We've got some folks calling in here in the second half. We'll tell you more about them in a few.
Yeah,
right now,
we're
going
to go ahead.
You've got a guess.
Yeah, we've got to go ahead. Bernie DeMar is on the line. Welcome, Bernie. Thanks for calling in.
You're more than welcome, Natalie.
Absolutely wonderful. We were just talking about, you know, Independence Day and what does freedom mean to us. And you are an amazing person, and we'd like to go ahead and let you tell us what freedom means to you, because in your history is incredible. If you could give us a little background, you were in the Marines. I'm interested about just so much you've done and worked with the spaceship with NASA. And you are an excellent person to tell us about the United States and what freedom means to you. So, what does freedom mean to you?
First of all, a little background. I'm a former Marine from the Korean era. No one really cared about us. They cared less about the people from Vietnam. We were just as important as what's called the Great Generation. One must remember that our country is different from all other countries, not just because of our Declaration of Independence, but because of our Constitution, which is the only one with three branches of government. The Supreme Court ensures that the Senate and the House of Representatives and the President adhere to our Constitution. Without those safeguards, we are nothing. Without our Constitution, we are nothing. So what is Independence Day? Our forebears put forth on this continent a nation like none other. The world flocks to our shores for freedom. We stand for freedom. We don't make wars, but we will fight to preserve our way of life and our freedom. Many have fallen. Many have returned, some wounded, some disabled. We are all proud of what we have done when we served our country. And the ones who have not served our country should be proud and be very thankful that we were willing to put forth an effort to defend our freedom. I wish all of you a very, very happy, safe 4th of July. Thank you.
Well, well put. Thank you so much.
Wow.
That is
so, Bernie, you served in Korea?
No, I'm a Korean veteran. The war ended when I was in training, so I didn't see any combat.
Oh, okay. Where did you train at?
I trained at Camp Pendleton in California and Kaneohe Air Station in Hawaii.
He was in Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
Back in the day.
That's
when
Kaneohe Air Station was situated. You could only get to Honolulu by the Pali Road. There were no freeways, no high-rises.
Wow.
it was a very beautiful place then.
Very, very nice, and it's the freedom, Bernie. You've seen a lot, and you've seen a lot over the years. And do you think our freedoms are still what we had before? Do you think it's changing, or that we're still on track?
Our freedoms never change. It's in our Constitution, as I said. Without the Constitution, we aren't anybody. That's our backbone. That's who we are.
That makes sense. Yeah,
our freedoms are granted within the Constitution, and they cannot be taken away.
It seems like some things are being whittled away now with the way changes are happening in the government, but I guess when push comes to shove, at least we have that wonderful Constitution to stand on and enjoy it.
Yeah, it is one of those things that, again, but freedom is worth it. And we were sharing, Bernie, earlier about an aha moment my son had with taking a friend of his who was a veteran of the Vietnam War to a veterans hospital. And, Ryan, for the first time at age 16, saw, these wounded warriors, guys without legs and in arms, and it was just overwhelming. He came home just really emotional because for the first time it dawned on him what it means when somebody says, that they've sacrificed for their country. And do you feel like being a veteran, do you feel like that we do enough, that we as a country, we as a culture, that we do enough really? Or is there a sense that still veterans are kind of unappreciated? How do you feel about that?
That's a very interesting question, and there's no straightforward answer. As I mentioned early on, I was in the United States Marine Corps. You have to volunteer for the United States Marine Corps. When I went in, they were still drafting. The government was still drafting at that time. That has changed today. So our military today is all volunteers.
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference. The people in our military today want to be there. As I said, they tout the great generation. The majority of them were draftees. And at that time, there were two armies, the United States Army, which were volunteers, and the Army of the United States, which were draftees. Well, that's all gone away.
Yeah.
So there was a difference then to now. And how does the country feel about veterans? All I can say, I was sitting watching a game years ago, and a man asked me, we started talking about the game, and he wanted to know what I did. So I told him, he's the first person, the second person that ever said, thank you for your service.
Wow.
The first person was a Korean, and I had my Korean veteran's hat on, even though I wasn't in combat. I was in during that conflict. And he said thank you to me. So there were two people over all the years that have said thank you.
I think we need to do way more of that, way, way more.
Well, no, that's what I chose to do. Right. I volunteered, so it's different than today. It's the same as today. You have to volunteer today.
Yeah.
So I was willing to stand up for our country. And it doesn't matter whether you're in combat or not. You stood up for your country, and you don't know what's going to happen when you enlist. You don't know if there's going to be a war. You don't know if an ongoing war is going to end. But you were willing to come forward. And that's what's important. And it's important that everyone understands, one, not everybody's suited for the military.
That's true. That's true.
And not everyone, one, I'll just leave it at that. Everyone's not suited for that.
I agree with you, but I think people that, if they're not suited, can still take that same sense of commitment to honor and push forward the freedom, you know, and liberty of the country. And in other ways, even if it's volunteer work or it's working within the government or working with the laws or trying to make changes, you know, so that kind of gives that, we need that level of commitment, right, to come back, which continues to give us our freedoms, right, I would believe.
Well, you're right, and if you read the paper recently, you will notice that the our new pope wants his parishioners to be evangelists and spread the word of the gospel. Well, that's true for our Constitution. When you're out and about, how many people do you hear talking about our Constitution or even know what's in it?
I agree.
Or know how the Declaration of Independence starts out. Okay?
You're right.
About the Gettysburg Address? We have to talk about our country, our freedoms, our liberty, and why we have them.
And what not it forget
takes it. To preserve them.
Yeah.
Okay?
Wow, thank you so
good
much.
Stuff.
Yeah, really, we need to not forget it. That's a big thing.
Bernie, we want to thank you, obviously. That goes without saying, but we want to say it anyway. We want to thank you for your service. Thank you for calling in today. Thank you for being willing to share. It's this important on this day before the 4th of July, and what you said really resonated, I think, with a lot of folks. I know it did with me. I can just hear the passion in your voice, and I love that. I love that about, you know, men who've done that.
It's our country.
Yeah.
We need to remember that.
If we don't stand up for it, we'll lose it. Look at the Middle East.
Yeah.
That makes
sense. Just another nation. They're not like us. They don't have our type of government. They have the parliamentarian form of government. We have a republic with a democratic form of government. Some people say we have a democracy, but we don't. If we had a democracy, everyone would vote for every issue. We don't do that. We have a representative form of government.
Yeah.
And we're a republic.
Yep, that's a great distinction.
I just wish we could make them start reading all the laws before they sign it, but that's another thing, another story altogether.
Another show.
Another show.
Thanks, Bernie. Thank you,
thanks, Bernie.
Bernie.
Okay, happy
folks,
happy
have
July
a good,
4th.
Say 4th of July now.
Thank you.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Wow. Wowie kazowie. Bernie, cool. Very cool. So over on Kaneohe, he was stationed there. That's interesting.
Yeah, way back when the Hawaii was, it was a lot different, much different.
You could tell he wasn't happy with how it's grown. He's like, it was very beautiful back then, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I know Honolulu can remind you of kind of downtown L.A. sometimes with all the traffic. But anyway, so, thanks, Bernie. Again, Realty Universal Radio, the name of the show. The number is 347-945-5428 if you want to call in. We're live for another half hour or so. Obviously, a lot of folks listen archived, and that's you're able to do that at blogtalkradio.com/Realty Universal.
Yeah, I had a couple. I think we're getting ready to have our second guest come on, too, and second half of the show. And I had a couple little tidbits about that I promised to mention before we took our last break, just about the 4th of July. Just a couple little tidbits, which most people probably know, or maybe they don't know. They declared on July 4th, Independence Day, but it was actually declared on July 2nd, and then the final wording was done a little bit later. I don't know how many people knew that, and they said the exact dates of declaration were signed, that what it was signed were disputed. The three founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin, all wrote in later documents that they had signed on July 4th, although historians disputed the claim because not all 56 delegates were present that day. So the final document they're stating didn't get done until August 2nd. This information is coming from the International Business Times, and it's just interesting tidbits. What is, like, does it really matter? Not really, because it got signed, and we know it's approximately then. And George Washington, of course, he was not one of the 56 men whose signatures appeared on the document. He wasn't a delegate, but by the commander of the Continental Forces at the time, the declaration was crafted. So on July 9th, 1776, he read the document aloud at New York City Hall to the cheers of many, many people, who later tore down a nearby statue of George III. So, you know, even back then, I mean, freedom's been such a, you know, some things never change, right? And we still have the freedom of speech, and some things don't change. So it's, and then also, so the signers of the Declaration were all born in America, and of course that wasn't the case. Eight of the delegates who signed were born in the British Isles. Guinevere, Francis Lewis, Robert Morris, James Smith, George Taylor, Matthew Thornton, James Wilson, and John Witherspoon. There's if anybody else has any myths or facts they'd like to call in, please call in 347-945-5428. We'd love to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, love to have your thoughts. Absolutely. And with us now, for the next few minutes, is retired Major Douglas Frazier. He is in the phone zone, I believe. Are you there, Douglas?
Yes, I'm here, Randy.
Welcome.
Welcome.
You're
there. Thank you. Good to be here.
Welcome.
Kind of a serendipity, you know. It's interesting how, I'll just put it this way. I'll just share a portion of the things I do is I do a lot of ministry work in India.
Really?
And
well, God bless you.
Thank you. But I was there one time, and I had a word from God, and he said, expect the unexpected. And it's been a blessing. It's truly been a blessing. So this was an unexpected activity to today, and I look forward to it.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah, I could tell just by your little introduction there, this time is going to fly by. So, because you just brought up a whole other show, we'd love to have you back and maybe talk about your ministry in India as well, because the second half of this show is all about, you know, how to give back, how to be the change in the world, you know, and all of that stuff. And that's a whole other probably conversation with you. We may get to some of that. What we want to talk about today, because it's the eve of course, our Independence Day, is freedom and what it means to you. Now, you were pretty much, joined the United States Air Force in 1966, came up through the ranks to Staff Sergeant, and then USAF ROTC at Angelo State, where you met your wife in the ROTC. That's cool. So then did you guys serve together for a while there?
Yes, we did. It's quite interesting. At that time, when my wife came into ROTC, that was the first year that they opened up ROTC programs to women.
Wow, what year was that?
That was 1970. Well, it would have been 1973.
Wow.
So that's not really that long ago. I mean, we've had women in the military. In fact, a part of, I guess, our family history, this is quite incredible. My wife's father fought in World War I.
Mm. Wow.
He was much older than her mother, and her mother was a WAC in World War II.
Wow.
And then her uncle was a pilot in the Air Force. My dad actually was in World War II era, and he did not actually go into the war conflict because he was in a special naval aviation cadet program, which was kind of like going to college. and learning to fly at the same time. So the war ended, and he decided he would opt out of the Navy and come back. But, yeah, I met my wife at Angelo State University. She was with several women. I think we had, if I'm not mistaken, I think there was about six women in that class. And for us, it was quite unique since we both went together through the ROTC program together as a married couple, because we got married just a couple months after I met her. And
really? So we wow.
Yeah. And so we went through the ROTC program together and were commissioned together. And it was quite interesting. She actually went on to active duty a couple months before I did. So in terms of rank order, actually, I owed her a salute. So we kind of had an interesting
time. Isn't that
awesome,
especially back in the 70s? Did you get – I mean, were you able to be stationed right in the same place? Is that how that still worked?
Yes. Yeah, we chose a career field. We were in missile operations, ICBM missile operations in Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota.
Wow.
And not too many people wanted to go there. And we had one of our instructors who said, you know, it is cold in the winter, et cetera, but it's a great place. And, you know, he was right. He gave us really good advice. We had a great time there. We had our first child there. And at that time, my wife said, you know what? I think I'm ready to retire and become a full-time mom.
Aw, congratulations. That's great.
But she had a great career. She was you know, in terms of women in the military, she was in that era where women started doing some things different. And she mm-hmm. was one of, in missile operations, she was what they called a targeting team chief, where it was interesting. I was on the crew force and actually sat down in the silos with my partner, and we had the keys to launch the missiles, but she had the tapes and would go and launch all the launch codes into the missiles if that was needed. So we had an interesting time with being in the Strategic Air Command at that time.
Wow.
Wow.
So and now you're in North Dakota, and I'm guessing the reason that the base is in North Dakota is that it's there's not a lot of population around. Does that enter into why
not a lot of population and yeah. The other reason, just because of the way the Earth's shape is, the trajectory of ICBMs to go to a target. Of course, that at that time we were in the Cold War with the mutual assured destruction with the Soviets, and it was a lot easier to launch in that direction from a farther northern plane than other places.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you bring up again a whole other layer to what you know, people might think, well, North Dakota, you're out there practicing, you know, maybe some missile exercises here and there. But no. You guys, we were in the middle of this Cold War. Did you guys have nuclear warheads there ready to go?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
In fact, Minot Air Force Base, in fact, the state of North Dakota with Minot Air Force Base and Grand Forks Air Force Base, which was on the eastern side over towards Minnesota, we would be considered, because of the B-52 nuclear capability and then the ICBM capability, would have been considered about the third most powerful nuclear force in the world at that time.
Mm. Wow. So was there, I mean, I just got to ask, I guess this isn't classified anymore, but I mean, you know, you never know, but I mean, were there any times where you guys were on red alert, or was it all kind of just, okay.
No. During my time, we never were. Now, we practiced a lot, of course. I mean, that's a part of the history of the Strategic Air Command, of being on alert and all the different activities that they were responsible for. So the level of alert and concentration was extremely high, of just being prepared.
Wow.
And you know, I would add, and this was something recently in the news, there was some real concern, actually up at Minot, because some of the people on the crew force up there were not showing, I'll just say, some responsibility for the task that they were required to meet. And my wife and I talked about that, and we felt perhaps it's because they don't see themselves as having a great responsibility anymore. And so the duty can get extremely boring, of just going out and sitting alert. And so there's some challenges there. And unfortunately, some people don't see the need for having that type of weapons. Hopefully we would never have to use them, but we've also just got to be vigilant of what's available in the world today.
So you think, what does freedom mean to you today? Do you think the young people aren't seeing it the same as it was seen 40 years ago as far as defending our country?
Well, you know, I really can't say that defending our country, because when you go back to 9/11 and the numbers of young people that signed to go and join the military, particularly in the operational ground forces, it was huge. I mean, one of my cousins, his son joined, and we knew several other people that joined, you know, just readily, because they knew that this was something important. We are a land where freedom, let's put it this way, with all the immigration issues, people come here for one reason. They want to be free,
right?
And they want to have the economic activity. I spent a lot of my military career in Japan, and in fact, my first duty assignment after I got out of basic in my tech schools was in Japan, and basically that was just a little over 20 years after the end of World War II.
Yikes.
And that's not such a very long time.
Uh-uh.
And
awkward.
I was up in northern Japan, and actually going through some more of my university studies, and we had some of the Japanese people that were on the University of Maryland staff come in and explain to us what was going on in Japan at the time when they were growing up.
Wow.
And here's,
wow, that makes me heart.
Here is the one thing that really struck me. The country of Japan had such an outlook on the freedom and also the Western movement of the United States, of, you know, becoming the United States. We gave them a vision of potential. And that was a part of the education that the children were taught. They said, we want to be like the U.S. and have economic potential. And they didn't see it quite as the freedom aspect, but that freedom of having a good economy and something for the future. And, of course, at that time, Japan had never lost a war. And so they were a force to be contended with. And I had some interesting conversations with some of my Japanese friends that actually were in World War II. And some of them wouldn't share anything. Others, one of my friends, he said, I didn't want to fight. I had no desire to fight, but he was in a reserve unit up in the north, and he basically said, every time one of my units got called out, I went downtown and got as drunk as I could, so they throw me in the hospital, so I never had to leave.
Oh, no.
That's one way to do it.
Smart.
Wow. As you're talking. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. One of my other friends, he's passed away now, and he served in the Japanese military, in the Japanese army, but he had such a respect for America that he began learning English on his own, and he could recite Kennedy's inaugural address, his address, with great pride. And he says, the thing that makes America different. Now, this is a former Japanese soldier. This is what he told me. He said, the thing that makes America so different in the world, he said, you people are willing to go and spill your blood for the freedom of other people.
Mm.
That is true.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
That's powerful. We are listening and visiting with retired Major United States Air Force Douglas Frazier here on this Independence Day Eve, really, is what we could call it, I guess. And so much, obviously, to talk about. Now, of course, you do, you know, you're a minister, you do missionary work to India, and we may get still to some of that. I want to work my way that way, but we'll definitely have you back because that leads right in, that fits right in with what we do here each week. But what I wanted to ask, because, again, I'm just a history nut, and you're kind of pushing my history buttons here. when you mentioned Japan and, of course, their, you know, recovery from the war and then their attitudes toward America, you know, I've watched a lot of History Channel. I think any of us who have, pretty familiar with, you know, Hitler's rise to power and how, you know, he finagled his way in to be, quote-unquote, elected. And then once he was elected, of course, he became a dictator, much like, you know, other folks we've seen since try and do the same thing. And it's pretty, what's the word I want? It's pretty clear that initially and then even through the war, a large number of Germans weren't really necessarily on board, you know, with what Hitler was doing. When you talk about Japan, was there that sense there
there was a sense of that, and I don't know how large it was, but I'll share two stories with you that will be quite striking. The first comes from a guy that was in World War II. I guess you could call him like today, like kind of a special ops. We didn't have the SEALs, but he was tasked to go into Japan on the mainland and find out any sort of information he could, and then send it back through whatever channels they used to send back. And this is what he told us. He came in because I spent a time there as an intelligence officer. He came in and shared with us. He said, during that time that I was on the ground, I am an American. He was a white guy. He was not of Japanese descent. He said, I never had one night that I slept by myself. And you can take that for what it means. So there was some grouping there that had, you know, that he never got turned in, and he's still alive today. He might not be alive today because that's been quite a few years ago, but he married a Japanese woman, and after the war was over, you know, he lived the rest of his life in Japan. But that's an interesting.
Yeah.
Portion right there.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of that, I'll just say the Christian community in Japan, which is not much of a percentage. It's way less than 1%.
Really?
Okay.
Wow.
There were several, I'll just say, missionary conclaves in Japan, and we actually were involved in one of these that had been actually opened in 1921 or 25. So this was a grouping of where the missionaries from all over the world would come together. They had cabins. It's a beautiful area up in near where the Winter Olympics were held a few years back. Beautiful, beautiful area. And it was a combination of Americans that also had Japanese people in ministry, and they would go. Well, the war started, and the Japanese people promised to protect this area and keep it. The war ended. The missionaries came back. General MacArthur said, I want missionaries to come back to Japan. It all reverted back, and some of these Japanese people actually had the cabins where they lived to safeguard themselves during the war. And some of their stories were during the war years, of course, when the emperor got on the radio, they were just like everybody else. They'd never heard the emperor speak. But a lot of these Japanese people lived in the Tokyo area, and, of course, Tokyo was totally firebombed. There was more damage in Tokyo by firebombs than by the atomic bombs at Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And so some of these people, because of the construction of the cabins, were actually able to deconstruct their cabins in the mountains and take them to their homes in the valley down in the Tokyo area.
Wow.
But that was a relationship that was established over many, many years, and it was an interesting thing to hear some of these older Japanese people share that story of just that one group. So, yeah, there was I'm sure that there was some grouping there in the country that, you know, they didn't want to go to war. And I know I had a very interesting conversation with another Japanese man from World War II who was a naval Zero pilot. And I happened to meet him just in a very interesting way. I met his son, and he said, "Would you like to meet my dad?" Because I saw this picture of this young Japanese guy standing in front of a Japanese Zero. And I said, "Your dad's still alive?" He said, "Oh, yeah." And so he came in, and almost immediately he began to apologize to me for, you know, for the war. And I said, "No, you don't need to apologize to me. You were serving your country just as well as the men from our country were serving our country. You were called to duty according to what you saw it, and of course, maybe over it didn't look right, but that's what you were called to do. So you don't owe me an apology." And I guess I came from some of that is a great amount of my time in Japan was dealing with the Japanese self-defense forces in the defense of Japan against the Soviets. So, in fact, I can tell you this story, too. We were at a joint conference, and we would go out with our Japanese hosts and my division. We would get together with not only the guys that we worked with, the husbands, but we would bring our families together, the kids together, the wives together, and have some good time to share that way, too. But we were at a conference, and we were downtown at dinner, and they began to sing some songs. So I asked one of my friends, I said, "Major Yamaguchi, what exactly are we singing?" And he said, "Oh, these are World War II paratroop songs."
Hmm.
I'm going, "Oh, okay." So here we have the U.S. forces and the Japanese self-defense forces. We're having a good time at a party, and we're still singing World War II Japanese paratroop songs.
Oh, my goodness. Could, believe me, and we may do this just off the air. I could listen to stories forever, my friend. I do, before we've got about 5 minutes, and I do want to get your take, and this is kind of your chance to sum up and or preach a little if you want, however you look at it. But talk about, based on your experience in the military, your love for your country, what does freedom mean to you?
I guess when I look at it, From the aspect of how I grew up and now where I am today, it's the ability where a person can do the things that really God wants them to do, has given them a capability, the opportunity of just moving forward, whether it's in education, whether it's in business, you know, your family. Serving your nation. And also, the thing that I've learned over many years, I think also because of some business background, is I've found this to be true, that if I can join in with the culture of another nation and the things that are precious to them and the things that they know, and the things that I've been taught and the things that are important to me, and you bring them together, we build something that's much stronger and much better. And I believe that that is a part of even our founding fathers, as you guys were talking on the last session with the other gentleman that you had on, that's a part that makes us unique, because we are willing to go in and help other people if they'll allow us to. Not to be the ugly American, but to be the American that comes alongside and helps to empower them, uplift them, and that just American can-do spirit. You can do it.
Yeah.
And that to me is really the freedom that we have, because it's almost from the beginning. We can do this. We can make something better. And we did that throughout our history. And we're willing to even die for it when we see that opportunity for others has been taken away from them.
Wow.
And your example earlier, really, Japan is an example of that. I mean, we
yes.
not only defeated
yes.
them, but we dropped the atomic bomb on them. And yet,
yeah.
as you said, you know, in the 60s, whenever, you know, fast forward after the, you know, the end of the war, and kind of they're teaching the kids about, you know, wanting to be like America. And
yeah.
so that's an amazing thought to think about, because I would think there would be some residue of real bitterness, and I'm sure there is, but a byproduct or a fruit of eventually, you know, connecting with them is that they saw and were encouraged and inspired by the American way of life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, in fact, that's interesting that you'd bring that up. A part of my business career was with Amway, the Amway Corporation.
Oh, really?
And this is a part of who we are. The largest portion of our business, you could guess, is in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually helped start that business there in 1979, actually,
mm-hmm.
while I was in the military. But you see, that's a part of it. Even Rich DeBoss, who was one of the founders, who was a World War II veteran along with his partner, Jay Van Andel, who came out of World War II and said, hey, let's do something with our life. Let's build a business. And they did. And, you know, today it's about a $12 billion business around the world where they bring in, you know, the ability to be free, to have your own business and make a better life.
Wow.
That's a part of, you know, what we could say is the American dream that we can't lose.
Yeah.
We can't lose that.
Wow. We've got like 1 minute. And, again, retired Major Douglas Frazier, United States Air Force. I knew this would fly by.
This is wonderful.
Have to get you
I usually chime in, and I'm not saying anything. It's so interesting. I'm just listening. It's wonderful.
We could hear
Thank
more
you
stories.
So much.
Yeah, and we want to talk to you again. We'll get you on and talk about what you do in terms of your coaching and your business, but also your ministry to India. So I think we're going to get you back a few times, but thank you for sharing today. So much of this was meaningful, and I know you've blessed people by your presence here. So thank you so much.
It's wonderful.
Well, thank you,
guys. For being on.
And, you know, it's programs like yours that make a difference. I don't know how many people are in your listening audience, but I know this way, no, as one point, if you've touched one person's life, you've made a big difference.
Yeah. Amen, absolutely, brother.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm so glad. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you're doing the freedom, I mean, and teaching other people how to live God's word and with freedom and the ability to be able to move things forward and make a change. It's wonderful. Congratulations.
We'll
thank you for serving. Thank you for all that you do.
All righty. All righty.
Bless you, brother.
You guys have a blessed day. And a happy 4th to all the folks out in California from the big state of Texas.
All righty. Take care.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. Powerful.
That was wonderful. I didn't even interject. I just was so interesting to listen and listen and listen.
Yeah.
It was just awesome.
And, very, very cool.
Yeah,
have a great
everybody
one.
Out there, I hope everybody has a wonderful, wonderful July 4th tomorrow and have great cookouts and family get-togethers.
Yeah.
And we honor all our military and just I'm thrilled to be able to do this. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Mm.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.